Well, it's been a minute, as the kids like to say, but Andrew Mason and I are back here on the Horsing Around podcast. Happy to be doing it. Took our little break. Andrew went his direction. I went up to Vail, played a little lacrosse. Andrew, of course, back in Carolina and other points of the nation. But we're back to talk a little Bronco football. As Mr. Mason, when we last left everybody, the quarterback competition, according to some, has kind of tightened up a bit. I got to be honest with you, with what my eyes saw in training camp or in OTAs, the off-season camp, I'm not sure it's quite as tight as maybe some has let the fan base believe, but it should be interesting nonetheless because I think both quarterbacks have shown improvement over the offseason.
They did, and I think there was some palpable improvement from Paxton Lynch, I think especially in the third week of OTAs. I thought that was his strongest week, seeing every snap that he had out there. And then the last week when it was the official mini camp, the only days that could be mandatory, did some good things, but also had some struggles. I thought that Trevor Siemian probably had the better of it that week. But again, you know, the whole thing of those 4 weeks was that it was a prologue to training camp. It wasn't until that last week, the mini camp week, that they were starting to see offensive concepts in Mike McCoy's scheme for a second time. So, you know, really it was just all about setting things up for what they're going to do starting two weeks from this past Thursday. So, you know, I'd still say, based on the fact that Trevor Siemian has a little more experience, I'd still say he's got a slight lead, but you know, if Lynch can show the same kind of improvement that he did during that third week of OTAs, it's got a chance to be close well in August.
Let's speak honestly though for a minute, Andrew. Both quarterbacks have to come back ready to compete. Like Vance Joseph told us, come back even, don't come back behind. He doesn't expect you to make growth necessarily in this time off. You are allowed some time off, but don't come back behind. I think Trevor Siemian, as much as I bang the drum for him, if you're being honest about it, the reason why he didn't seize the job for Mark Sanchez sooner was he came back a little bit behind and not even. So we'll see if he can't change that, and we'll see how much Paxton grows.
Yeah, and you've seen some. I mean, it's only glimpses, but you know, you're aware that Paxton Lynch has been doing some work. He's been back down in Florida with Charlie Taft, who's a quarterback guru that he's worked with the last couple of years, former college coach at the Citadel, among other stops. So he's been getting working on his timing, his drops, his footwork. So it's been good to see him, you know, kind of get back on his fundamentals and continue to kind of to hone that in the interim. Now, the work they're doing now, we'll talk more about this over the course of this podcast. Of course, this week it's been kind of interesting because there was a lot of back and forth about whether everybody was going to get together and have a throwing session like happened in the Peyton Manning days, and even happened last year when Mark Sanchez got everybody get together in Southern California. Of course, there's not going to be a throwing session. I don't think it's as big a deal as a lot of people are making it out to be. But, you know, it's been good to see Paxton Lynch get that work. We're going to catch up with Trevor Siemian, in fact, at his his charity event coming up here over the weekend. And it'll be interesting to kind of find out what kind of work that Trevor Siemian has managed to do in the interim, and see how he's managed to stay sharp. Because, like you said, when he came back for training camp last year, looked a little bit rusty right out of the gates. And he needs to get off to a good start, because – You can hear from the comments from Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, it seems like at least the wide receivers would like to have this quarterback competition settled sooner rather than later. So there's not going to be a real grace period when these guys get back. I think even the coaches want to see one of these two quarterbacks emerge, and if Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch gets off to a slow start and the other one gets off to a fast start, for all we know, that might be the separation that Vance Joseph is looking for.
It very well could be. Let me ask you this, because there's a couple things you touched on, and we've got to go back to the passing thing, and our buddy Tyler Palumbus, I thought, had an excellent observation as to whether these passing camps really are worth anything in the offseason without coaches around. So I want to get back to that point. But first and foremost, when you talk about the receivers and the offense as a whole, let's be honest about it. We can all point to leaders. I think Emmanuel's trying to be more of a leader. You know, we'll see. I think Ronald Leary and of course, Matt Paradis are leaders along the offensive line. You can have leaders dotted throughout the offense. But the reality is the quarterback role comes with a leadership expectation. And if you're not the starter, it's hard to make everybody come and follow your parade, so to speak, which is why I think, honestly, although I think Trevor could have been the guy to call the passing camp because he was the number one as we left last season, and by all indications, as you put it, a slight lead right now. And look, I'm just going to be honest about it. I think Paxton Lynch has a little more ground to make up than others do, but we'll wait, let that play out in camp. The bottom line is, how important do you think? You've been around a lot of teams. You covered the league a long time. You and I have both seen a few offenses put in this Broncos system. How important is it that they get a depth chart established so you can get your ones together and get that cohesion going, especially in a new offense like this?
It's pretty important. I think when you hear Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders talk about it, those are two guys that they've been around the block a few times. They understand the value of cohesion in an offense. So I don't think they're the only ones who feel that way. And I think they also look back at last year's experience when there was not a declared starter until after the second game of the preseason. And they look at how the season went from there, that it was a frustrating finish going 9-7. It did not live up to their standards. And certainly there's been a lot of soul searching from players like Demaryius and Emmanuel trying to figure out, okay, what went wrong? What could have gone different? How can we prevent that? And some of it's looking inward at themselves. Some of it is looking at the situation. Some of it is looking at how things progressed from the very first workout until the moment the Broncos were eliminated on Christmas night in Kansas City. And I think they look back at that whole process and they say, well, you know, if we could have known who our starter was and had not seen a split of reps so deep into the summer, and we could have gotten more timing and cohesion with that guy and gotten more comfortable, that maybe the outcome could have been a little better. The timing could have been a little bit better. And so I think they kind of look back at that experience, and that's why they say, okay, let's get that starter sooner. And I think that, so yeah, I do think there probably is going to be a value to naming that starter. But at the same time, you've got the most important thing is making sure the decision is right. And if you don't have enough information to make the right decision before the second preseason game or the third preseason game, then you can't make that decision just for the sake of making that decision. That is still the first priority. Make sure you have enough data to make the right choice. If you don't have that, all other conditions are secondary. But if you feel like you've got enough data, then you make that call as soon as possible.
Well, and I was going to say, it's on the quarterbacks now to show up and make this an easy decision. As Vance Joseph has said, he's not doing this because he likes the drama. He's not doing this to get an NFL Network and ESPN and all the outlets, all the talk shows in town something to talk about. He's doing this because he wants a clear-cut winner, as you said. And that means the guys have to show up and seize the job so that they can have that extra time to work with their guys. And it brings us to the passing camp. Again, I think it's hard to put a passing camp together when you're not quite sure who the starter's going to be. You know, I do think Trevor had intention of putting one together, and then he had his shoulder injury. And so that derailed anything going down, you know, earlier on in the offseason. But quite honestly, Andrew, it really is, it's a tough scenario to play out this year because they could have gotten together and they could have thrown around before any official offseason activity started, which is when Peyton used to do his. But you didn't have the playbook. You didn't know the routes necessarily. Trevor wasn't familiar with what they were even asking. I'm not even sure Mike McCoy was completely positive, and Bill Musgrave, how all this stuff would work, to even give him some ideas to what to work on, because as McCoy said, they were building this thing from the ground up once you got a look at what they had. So in your mind, and I'll tell everybody what Tyler had kind of tweeted out in a series of tweets about the whole thing, but in your mind, you kind of let everybody know, not a big deal, you don't think that they didn't do the annual off-season get-together.
Well, the thing is, first of all, it's unusual. There are very few quarterbacks who do that. This is not something that's standard operating procedure, even for elite level quarterbacks. I mean, this is something very special. I mean, you see Peyton Manning doing it, and then, you know, of course, Eli Manning following suit. A big part of the reason why they did this was because of how tight they were with their old college coach, David Cutcliffe, who, of course, was Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator at Tennessee, eventually was Eli Manning's head coach in Mississippi, and now is the head coach at Duke. Cutcliffe, you know, had, because he's the head coach at Duke, had basically the keys to the facilities, hand them over to his guys, the Mannings, gave them the you know, the run of the place. You know, it was easy, and everyone liked coming to Duke. I mean, I think if basketball season was going on, Peyton would kind of throw everybody a bone by saying, "Hey, you know, here's some tickets to the Duke Carolina game at Cameron Indoor Stadium," and you know that, and players would go to that, and they get to experience something really cool in sports, and they'd love it, and they'd all have a good time. So it was something really unique, and I think it's a reminder of just how extraordinary, and I think the word Tyler used was rare in one of his tweets, rare that Peyton Manning was that as a quarterback here. I mean, and how privileged we were to kind of see this thing, see firsthand what he was able to do. There's very few quarterbacks, very few people players who come through this league who can organize guys like that, who can basically get a few guys together and turn in something that replicates a practice on their own. That's just not something that most players, most quarterbacks can do. I mean, I can think of how many times it happened effectively on one hand. I think back to like 1982 during the NFL strike. A lot of teams were kind of disorganized during the 8 weeks that they were out. And one of the few teams that was actually kind of together was the Washington Redskins. Joe Theismann was keeping that team together, and they were having some sessions that resembled organized practices. And I don't think it was any kind of coincidence that the Redskins went on to win the Super Bowl when most of the rest of the league was just kind of, it was, you know, in a state of disorder and not really on the same page. So again, it's a very unusual circumstance, positive for the Broncos while Peyton Manning was here. I don't think it reflects poorly on Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch that they can't get that together. I mean, Lynch has only been in the league 1 year. Trevor Siemian's only started 14 games. They're still learning how to be quarterbacks, learning how to be pros. It's, you know, and they're surrounded by veterans. You know, they're still kind of learning how to lead guys that are older than them, that have more experience than them. It's a different dynamic. So it's not something I think that you can chalk up as a quote unquote flaw for Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch. They couldn't get guys together. It's part of it's just where they are, and again, part of it is just how special Peyton Manning was and how unusual he was. And we need to, part of it is just sit back and appreciate just how extraordinary that guy was, and try not to judge what the Broncos quarterbacks are going forward on and off the field based on what number 18 did both during games and in the offseason.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of trying to judge other Bronco quarterbacks for whether they could roll to one sideline and basically throw a BB 50 yards down the field to the opposite sideline the way John Elway could. It's just everybody's unique. They have a special talent. It just is what it is. I agree with you. I agree with Tyler. Tyler basically said, as you'd laid out there, most quarterbacks don't run a practice. Peyton Manning could. It was his offense. It was his passing tree. I mean, you know what? Mike McCoy did a lot to augment that offense. Adam Gase did a lot to augment that offense and help make sure Peyton mixed in the run, you know, properly the way that he needed to. Both those coaches did a lot for Peyton Manning, but at the end of the day, Peyton Manning had his passing tree, and I don't think a lot of coaches try to take that passing tree away from him. And again, that was the uniqueness. That's why he's the Hall of Famer. That's why the jacket's already sized up, and we're just waiting until we get to 2020 for him to be announced as a Hall of Famer. I'm with you. I don't think everybody needs to freak out, because honestly, there's no point in running things that aren't your offense. You know what I mean? And we don't know. This team doesn't know what the offense is. Maybe next year.
Yeah, we don't know what the strengths are. And right. And this offense has always been tailored to what the strengths are. It's a variable offense. It's been run in so many different permutations, you know, since this language was first really written back in the 70s by Ray Perkins and Ron Earhart working for the New England Patriots under Chuck Fairbanks. And it's taken on so many different forms that we don't know what the strengths are. And we're still, even after 4 weeks of OTAs, we still don't know that. I think we're still going to be learning that. And I think we're still going to be learning the strengths of this offense well into the regular season, quite frankly. And that's part of something I'm sure we're going to touch on in future podcasts. But this state of transition, you know, growing process, this is something that's going to continue well into the season. It's something that people are just going to have to kind of get accustomed to. There's going to be some bumps and there's going to be some adjustments along the way.
Well, look, and to your point there, I've always said it. It always feels to me like when you put a new offense in, for whatever reason, sometimes it takes like 6 weeks for that to get humming. The only one, you're hoping that you have some sort of feel and chemistry by the middle of the year, right? If things go well. And it's interesting to me because the only person that I saw come out where the offense seemed to be really good at the start and then fizzle out was Josh McDaniels. His first year, it was almost the reverse, as to where he came out and surprised everybody. Then they got the tape on him and everybody started to stop them. Like you said, the Bronco fans have to be patient. This thing's going to evolve. And you just hope you find your footing and you can hang in there. And because, again, it's a heavy home schedule early, so you can't afford to sputter too much and give up home games that you're going to need towards the playoff equation later on in the year. But, it'll be interesting, and the Bronco fans have to be patient. I want to touch on, since we're on the quarterbacks, and what a shock, I do want to touch on something else, and I want to get your opinion on it. I mentioned it in my Orange Herd podcast. And it's the one thing I don't want Bronco country kind of spiraling into is whether it's Trevor or it's Paxton, you just want to find a quarterback, right? I grew up in this fan base. I don't really care if it's the first or the seventh rounder. I got news for you. I don't think John Elway, I've heard too much of this narrative that John Elway is going to force a first rounder on people. I'm sorry, that's not how the Hall of Famer functions. When John Elway told you that he knows what a good locker room feels like, well, in my opinion, a good locker room also knows who won the job. And if John Elway knows that locker room knows who won the job, he's not going to put his ego in the way and force a first rounder to play if the guy that was drafted later ultimately wins the job. I hope Bronco Country is just rooting to identify a quarterback. And don't make it so much of a Trevor versus Paxton versus maybe down the line a Chad Kelly camp. I think it's getting a little ridiculous.
Well, yeah, and I understand why maybe fans want to see one or the other. Maybe you like the potential of one over the other. Maybe you like the personality of one or the other. I get that. But if you're rooting in a competition, if you're rooting for a guy, that's fine. But don't root against the other. You know what I'm saying? I actually recall, I wrote something on Twitter. I said something about how Simeon had a good day, and someone responded on Twitter and said, boo. And I'm like, and I said, really, this is what Broncos country has come to? You're booing the fact that one of your quarterbacks had a good day in practice. That's where it goes too far, that you're not simply rooting for a guy, you're rooting against one of your team's players. That's where it crosses the line. And the big thing is, whenever one quarterback is declared as the starter, what I sincerely hope above all is that every Broncos fan gets behind that guy, knowing that this team's best shot for success is if the player who, whether it's Trevor or Paxton, whoever is named the starter for week one, the best chance for success is if that guy does well and is carrying the team all the way through the season into the playoffs. Because if there's a quarterback change at some point during the season for a reason other than injury, it means that that quarterback that started the year hasn't done well. And in all likelihood, it means the team is struggling and is behind in the standings, maybe too far to catch up and win the division and make the postseason. So that's, again, that's why you want whoever gets the job, you should want him to do well. And if you are rooting against the quarterback that gets the job, frankly, you're not a Broncos fan.
And in that point, I want to remind everybody, because we mentioned it in a podcast a month ago, before the fever pitch of the quarterback chase is on and everybody's in the middle of it. I've talked a lot about Trevor Siemian simply because I'll admit that is my personal pick to win the job. I just think that year starting puts him ahead of things. And I do think, from what I've seen from Paxton, I've seen a lot of growth that makes me excited this offseason. But I still think he needs to have one more year of growth like that. And I want to remind people, as you and I have talked about, if it takes 3 years for Paxton to compete for the starting job, well, that was basically that what was written in the description of when you drafted him. This was not a plug-and-play quarterback. You were going to have to take some time with him. And if he doesn't win the job this year, it doesn't mean the sky is falling, period.
Exactly. I mean, it may well be that the template for how quarterbacks are developing could be changing a little bit as we see more of these spread type guys. We've talked about how offensive tackles from spread schemes are going to take a little longer to develop as they get to the pros now, because they're having to learn how to operate in 3-point stances, something they're not doing in college. And it may well be that we're talking about the same thing with quarterbacks as well, which may cause us to have to take a breath and be much more patient with the development of quarterbacks coming from out of these schemes, and to kind of change how we project them as pros compared to what we've been doing for the past couple of decades. And if Paxton Lynch does take 3 years, if that's what it ends up being for him, you know, then it may be something that we have to look at for a lot of quarterbacks coming out, because more and more of them are coming from out of schemes like the one that Paxton Lynch ran at Memphis under Justin Fuente, who was the head coach back then for the Tigers.
All right, let's wrap up with some more quarterback talk, but the former quarterbacks, I got a couple fun things for you. Peyton Manning hosted the ESPYs on Wednesday night. I thought he was awesome. I thought he could be the Billy Crystal of that show for a while if he chooses not to jump into a second job, because I thought his wit and his boldness made the evening fun. I want
to
get your.
He wasn't afraid to tick people off, and that's looking at Kevin Durant's reaction.
Yeah, I want to know. I got to ask you real quickly. We talked about it on the show. I don't think people said that was staged. I think Kevin Durant knew a joke about him was coming. I don't think he knew that joke was coming, and I don't think that was a fake look. What is your decree?
I don't think it was fake at all. I think that was a real look. I don't think he was I think he was expecting a joke. I don't think he was expecting a neutron bomb like that. And that sort of fear and that sort of comedic fearlessness is why I would like to see Peyton Manning not only back on that show. What other award shows can he do? I mean, is Peyton a cinephile? Can we get, you know, if Ricky Gervais wants to take a year off from the Golden Globes, can we get Peyton on there? Can he tweak some people there? I think he's got a future in this.
Well, look, I think he did a great job, but I think the only problem with your Hollywood angle is Kevin Durant was a little sensitive, as most of the NBA players were. Clearly, I don't think they have the thickest of skins locker room going on in there. I'm not sure actors have much thicker skin, do you?
Yeah, it would be fun, though.
Yeah, I think they're used to being told they're great and not quite. Because Peyton, to your point, what I loved about the interaction with Durant was Peyton looked at his look, and instead of being intimidated, like you said, Peyton was almost laughing because he knew he was mad. He's like, oh, you're mad? Then I'm going to make it worse. You better start laughing at yourself.
He kept twisting the knife. It was very much in the tradition of a great comedy roast. Like, oh, I've got something here. I'm just going to keep going and going and going and going. It's, you know, it's sort of the, you know, how it was sort of the, like a Seth MacFarlane Family Guy thing. How far can I take this before I'm at the line or across it?
Well, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, I agree. Okay, so now I've got to wrap it up with this. And by the way, just a tease for next week's podcast, heard some pretty good information about guys along the offensive line, and one in particular that should get Bronco fans excited, but we'll save that for next week since this is at a quarterback theme. Bleacher Report put out its 25, it was either 20 or 25 most clutch quarterbacks of all time. Two Bronco quarterbacks made the list, Peyton Manning and John Elway. I will tell you the results, but I've got to have an Andrew Mason educated guess as to who was higher in the most clutch ranking.
Well, I'm going to have to say that Elway's higher in clutch ranking.
You would be correct, sir. Elway came in at number 2 and Manning at number 5.
And it's going to be the drive and the drive two. Simple as that. And all the, he, of course, all the other comebacks he had, but you know, let me get, and I haven't seen the list, but I'm just going to guess Tom Brady's number 1.
Yes, sir. You're correct there. And I can't remember who were 3 and 4 ahead of Manning. There were some older time guys mixed in on the list, but like Eli came in at 10.
You got to have Joe Montana.
Yeah, you know what? How could I forget? Of course he is. Montana, I think, was behind Elway at 3.
4. There's 2 guys I'd put at 4. I'd guess for 4, again, not seeing the list. I'd say 4 has to be either Johnny Unitas or Roger Staubach.
And I can't remember the name. I'm sorry about that. I want to say it might have been Aaron Rodgers, but I can't remember for sure.
Hang on. I think I found it here. Johnny U.
Okay.
Johnny U. And I get that. 1958 NFL championship game. First overtime game ever played. You know, really redefined the quarterback position. Really, what one thing I would like to do, I want to do a real – At some point, I want to do a nice dive into Johnny U's numbers and compare them to his day and kind of extrapolate them to kind of show the value. Because I think he's sort of, because we're in these megawatt numbers now, I think Unitas' place in history has been a little bit lost, and I want to kind of push him back forward. And then Staubach, I mean, just his career was comebacks. I mean, he was captain comebacks.
Well, and let's be honest about it. Some of the people authoring these articles don't know their history quite well enough, just because they're younger. All right, you know, which means you need to do a little more research. Now, look, I like the list.
Pick up a damn book.
Yeah, well, I like the list these guys put together, but DeLome was on there. I mean, I've got to ask you, as a guy that covered and knows Carolina a little bit, should DeLome be on there?
Actually, yeah.
Okay, I'll trust you, the Oracle.
You know what? Go back to Super Bowl 38, and in that fourth quarter, DeLome matches Brady drive for drive. The reason why the Patriots won that game was because John Casey hooks a kick out of bounds and gives the Patriots the ball at the 40-yard line. Tom Brady has a short field, easy drive, gets him in field goal range, they kick the game, win field goal, game over. Jake DeLome did everything you possibly could do to give the Panthers a chance to get that game to overtime. I also think of other things in the regular season. I think about a game in 2008, week 1, Carolina goes out to San Diego. That Carolina doesn't have Steve Smith. He was suspended because he punched Ken Lucas in training camp. They go out there. This is when the Chargers were coming off their AFC championship game appearance the season before. A lot of people are picking the Chargers to go to the Super Bowl. And the Panthers are a double-digit underdog. No one's picking them to win. They don't have Steve Smith. People don't think they have a prayer. And DeLome, last play of the game, hits Dante Rosario, had a cup of coffee with the Broncos a few years later, in double coverage amid defenders in the back of the end zone on the last play of the game for a touchdown. He won a game, DeLone won a game in double overtime, hitting Steve Smith back during that Super Bowl run of 2003. The thing is, everyone fixates on DeLone's playoff meltdown against Arizona. It turned out to be his final playoff game, January of 2009. But there were a lot of clutch moments for DeLone over his career. Even like the first game he came in with Carolina in week one of 2003, he comes off the bench. Rodney Pete's playing terribly. They're behind against Jacksonville. Brings them back from three scores down. They win in the last minute. DeLone had a lot of clutch moments for Carolina that go under the radar. And, he wasn't elegant, wasn't always great, but did get it done a lot when the chips were down. And so I actually do see Jake DeLone as a top 25 all-time clutch quarterback, not a top 25 all-time quarterback, but a top 25 all-time clutch quarterback. They have him 23rd on this list. I can buy that.
All right. I smell a radio debate coming on this because I don't know that the body of work is as lengthy as I'd like it to be, but that's for another day. Hey, Mace, appreciate the time. We'll get into we'll get into some of the other positions next week on the Horsing Around podcast here on DenverBroncos.com. More to come.